Today's question is quite fundamental. What is a soul? This is Father Scott C. Toller. What follows next is a joyful reflection. It's Thursday, and if by this point in the week people are really getting on your nerves, I mean, they're driving you crazy. They're either whiny, cranky, they're using the silent treatment, they're trying to get you to do their work, they're just really getting on your nerves, please, please don't do anything you'll regret. Don't say anything that's not really Christian. Try to remember the words from the musical Les Miserables, to love another person is to see the face of God. Yes. If we can do that, if we can recognize the face of Christ in every person we meet, our hearts will be transformed. We will not give in to our anger, to our frustration, to our irritability. You got to remember that, huh? You know, being what I always refer to as a domestic mystic gives you the ability to override your human inclinations. I'm not going to say it's not there. But override your human inclinations to really, really let somebody have it. But rather to respond. To respond. In fact, here's what I want to do. I want to share with you today's food for thought. I know I usually do at the end of the program, but this fits in so well with this point I'm making at the beginning of Thursday's program. This is written by Frederick W. Faber. He writes, "Kindness has converted more sinners than zeal, eloquence, or learning." There you go. Point of fact. Well, let's get to the point of today's program. The question, a very fundamental question I asked, what is a soul? Well, we're told that we're made up of body and soul. But seriously, what is a soul? It would be interesting to record impressions of what comes to mind spontaneously when one hears the word soul. For many of us, I suspect the word, to the extent that it conjures up anything at all, produces an image, a very vague one, of some white, semi-invisible spiritual tissue paper that floats somewhere deep inside of us and which takes on stains when we sin and that will separate from the body at the moment of death and go off to be judged by God. Whatever the inadequacy of that picture, it is not without merit. We are, after all, trying to conceive of something inconceivable, and we need to form some picture of it. What is wrong with that conception, though, is that it separates the soul too much from the core of our persons, from our very self-consciousness, from our identity. Our soul is not something that we have. It is more something that we are. It is the very life pulse within us, that which makes us alive. Thus, we speak of someone as dying precisely when the soul leaves the body. That is accurate. The soul is the life principle within a human person, as indeed it is the life pulse within anything that is living. As such, it has two functions. Let me stop right here and tell you, I'm sharing this information with you from a book written by Ronald Ruhlheiser, and the title of the book, The Holy Longing. I love this book. I highly recommend it. Okay? So the two functions of the soul. First of all, it is the principle of energy. Life is energy. There is only one body that does not have any energy or tension within it, a dead one. The soul is what gives life. Inside it lies the fire, the energy that drives us. Thus we are alive as long as there is a soul in our bodies, and we die the second it leaves the body. It is interesting that sometimes when we use the word soul and think we are using it metaphorically, we are actually using it in a strangely accurate way. Thus, for example, we speak of soul music. What gives music a soul? This can be understood by examining its opposite. Imagine music that you so often hear in airports, supermarkets, and elevators. It is simple filler, soulless. It does nothing to you. It does not stir your chromosomes. certain other music does, and that is why we precisely call it soul music. It is full of energy, fire, and all the things that the principal eros carries: desire, disquiet, nostalgia, lust, appetite, and hope. Eros is soul, and soul gives energy. But the soul does more than merely give energy. It is also the adhesive that holds us together, the principle of integration and individuation within us. The soul not only makes us alive, it also makes us a one. At the physical level, this is easy to see. Our bodies, considered biologically, are simply an aggregate of themselves. It's an aggregate of chemicals. However, as long as we are alive, have a soul within us, all of these chemicals work together to form a single organism, a body, within which all the separate chemicals and all the processes they produce work together to make a oneness, a single thing, which is greater than the simple combination of all its parts. We call this a body, and every body depends for its existence upon a soul. Thus, when we see somebody die, we see precisely that from the second of death onward, we no longer have a body. In fact, we no longer even call it a body, but a corpse. At the second of death, all the chemicals begin to go their own way. Death and decomposition are precisely this. Chemicals which used to work together for a oneness, and were indeed a oneness, now go their separate ways. For a time after death, they still give the appearance of the body, but only because they are still lying contiguous to each other. That soon enough changes. Once the soul is left, the body too is no longer a body. Chemicals going each in their own way do not make life. What is true biochemically is also true psychologically. Here too, the soul is the principle of oneness. In the heart and in the mind, the soul is also what keeps us together. Hence we use the expression to lose one's soul. We are not necessarily talking of eternal damnation. To lose one's soul is to become, in contemporary jargon, unglued. To lose one's soul is to fall apart. Hence, when I feel my inner world hopelessly crumbling, when I do not know who I am anymore, and when I am trying to rush off in all directions at the same time, but do not know where I am going, then I am losing my soul. This, as much as the question of eternity, is what Jesus meant when he asked, "What does it profit a person to gain the whole world and suffer the loss of his or her own soul?" A healthy soul, therefore, must do two things for us. First, it must put some fire in our veins, keep us energized, vibrant, living with zest, and full of hope as we sense that life is, ultimately, beautiful and worth living. Whenever this breaks down in us, something is wrong with our souls. When cynicism, despair, bitterness, or depression paralyze our energy, part of the soul is hurting. Second, a healthy soul has to keep us fixed together. It has to continually give us a sense of who we are, where we came from, where we are going, and what sense there is in all of this. When we stand looking at ourselves confusedly in a mirror and ask ourselves what sense, if any, there is to our lives, it is this other part of the soul, our principle of integration, that is limping. Now, in a matter of speaking, the soul has a principle of chaos and a principle of order within it, and its health depends upon giving each its due. Too much order and you die of suffocation. Too much chaos and you die of dissipation. Every healthy spirituality, therefore, will have to worship at two shrines, the shrines of the God of chaos and the God of order. One God will keep us energized, the other will keep us joined together. These two functions of the soul are always in a creative tension. That is why we experience such intense struggle sometimes inside of ourselves. Energy and integration, passion and chastity, fire and water, are forever fighting each other, each having its own legitimate concerns for our health. Small wonder that living is not a simple task. This has immense practical implication for our lives. What is healthy for our souls and what is unhealthy for them? Thus, for example, is it healthy to see violence or sex on television or in the movies? Is this or that particular experience healthy or unhealthy for me right now? Given this background, we see that the question of what makes our souls healthy or unhealthy is very complex because on any given day, we might need more integration rather than energy, or vice versa. To offer just one simple example, if I am feeling dissipated, unsure of who I am and what my life means, I'm probably better off reading Jane Austen than Robert Waller, watching Sense and Sensibility rather than The Bridges over Madison County, and spending some time in solitude rather than socializing. Conversely, though, if I feel dead inside and cannot find any enthusiasm for living, I might want to reverse the menu. Some things help give us fire, and certain things help us more patiently carry life's tension. Both have their place in the spiritual life, and we look to our soul for that. Isn't that a great insight? I really like that. Okay, here's today's food for thought. Well, I gave it to you already. I'll read it again. Kindness has converted more sinners in zeal and eloquence or learning. All right, who do I want you to pray for today? I want you to pray for prison inmates. Even if you have a disdain for them, you got to pray for them. How do people get better if we don't pray for them? You got to pray that God will help them come to their senses if they were legitimately guilty of a crime. As you know, some people who are unjustly accused, don't have the money, can't get a hold of the right lawyer, and they're thrown into prison unjustly. Sometimes they stay there for the whole sentence. Other times they get out after a long time because they were proven to be innocent. And you know that being in a prison is no picnic. The things that go on in prisons are horrendous. We pray to God bless all prison inmates, men and women. Bless them and keep them safe from harm, physical, emotional, or sexual. Let those who care for them to treat them with dignity. Help those prison inmates who are losing hope not to lose hope. Bless their families while they're away from them. Help them be able to leave prison with a real change of heart so they never have to go back again. Amen. Now here's today's small attempt to make you smile or laugh. My cousin was behind the bakery's cash register one morning when a gunman burst in and demanded all the cash. As she nervously handed over the money, she noticed the rolls of coins in the back of the register. "Do you want the rolls too?" she asked. "No," said the robber, waving his gun, "just the money." He must have thought she was offering hot cross buns, rolls, bread rolls. Oh my. Well, all you can do is laugh, right? Want to contact me? Father Scott, 221 36th Street, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15201. Let me know you listened to the program. Send me your prayer intentions. If you haven't done it yet, send me a check. Make it out to TASH so I can keep my hospital open in Oaxaca. Send it to Father Scott, 221 36th Street, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15201. Lord, make me an instrument of peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there's injury, pardon. Where there's doubt, faith. Where there's despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. And where there is sadness, joy. Joyful, joyful, Lord.